Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
Scientists believe a species of monkeys used a raft to cross 160 kilometers of ocean from South to North America about 21 million years ago. The monkeys are similar to today's capuchins, small monkeys that often perform with humans at the circus. Scientists found 7 monkey teeth that became fossils in an area near the Panama Canal. The teeth were more than 5 million years old. Scientists think that is when the continents of North and South America came together. They said the teeth belonged to a species they called Panamosebus transitus. When the species lived, South America was not in contact with other continents. For that reason, South America has a strange variety of mammals. The animals grew and changed in interesting ways because they were separated from other animals. Jonathan Block works at the Florida Museum of Natural History on the University of Florida campus. He said that Panama was farther south than any other place in North America. He said the monkeys might have swum, but probably rode on some kind of a raft. Block believes these monkeys were the only mammals that were able to cross the waterway from South America to reach present-day Panama. The strip of land, known as the Isthmus of Panama, was formed about 3.5 million years ago. That land bridge permitted large numbers of animals to begin walking between the continents in one of the biggest mixing of species on record. Block said learning that monkeys lived in North America that long ago was a surprising discovery. For a long time, scientists thought that monkeys simply did not exist there. It would be like learning that Australia's kangaroos and koalas live in the wilds of Asia today. Next, Dan Friedel tells us news related to the world of tennis and a recently banned drug for tennis athletes.
Tennis star Maria Sharapova was almost in tears in early March when she told reporters in Los Angeles, California, that she tested positive for a banned drug. Sharapova said the drug meldonium came up on her test at the Australian Open in January. She said she made a huge mistake. 3 of her major sponsors suspended their business relationships with her after the test results. The International Tennis Federation, or ITF, started an investigation in March and suspended Sharapova while it was gathering information. She was one of many athletes suspended earlier this year. Now, she and other athletes may get a chance to play again this summer in time for the 2016 Olympic Games in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, which start on August 5th. The World Anti-Doping Association, known as WADA, monitors the drug testing programs of 600 sports organizations around the world, including the International Olympic Committee. Late last year, WADA announced it was adding meldonium to the list of banned drugs for 2016. The little-known drug was popular among athletes from Russia and countries in Eastern Europe. WADA says it detected the drug in 172 tests starting on January 1st. The drug was so popular, the BBC reported almost 500 athletes at the 2015 European Games tested positive for it. The drug is supposed to help athletes work harder while training or during competitions by carrying more oxygen than usual to muscles. However, some athletes said, although they stopped taking the drug in 2015, it still showed up in their drug tests in 2016. That has created a dispute over the suspensions. WADA recently said it does not know how long it takes meldonium to leave the body, especially if athletes were taking it for a long time. WADA now says athletes who stopped taking the drug last year could not reasonably have known or suspected that it would still come up on a drug test this year. Some banned athletes now are permitted to compete in their sports while more research is being done on meldonium. Two of those athletes are a Russian gymnast and a triple jumper from Bulgaria. Sharapova is still suspended. Her hearing is expected to take place soon, but the exact date has not been made public. The ITF is expected to rule sometime in the coming months. The Associated Press news agency reports that the ITF could take up to 3 months to announce its decision. That means Sharapova will likely not be able to play in the French Open when it opens on May 22nd. She won that competition twice. I'm Dan Friedel.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. Everyone knows about the flu and the common cold. But what about norovirus? If you haven't heard of norovirus, you are not alone. Most people haven't. The fact that people do not know its name does not mean it is rare. The virus is actually very common. Norovirus infects 700 million people each year, mainly in the developed world. The virus is a very aggressive intestinal illness. It causes nausea, vomiting, and the worst diarrhea most people have ever had. It is also a killer. More than 200,000 people a year die from this virus. Medical costs linked to norovirus can be as high as $60 billion a year. These costs include lost productivity at work because of personal illness or caring for a sick child. Because of this high price tag, health experts say norovirus is worth researching. Bruce Lee is a professor of international health at the Johns Hopkins University Bloomberg School of Public Health. Lee and his colleagues estimated the cost of the illness in 233 countries, regions, and territories around the world. He says norovirus is responsible for about 50% of all stomach and intestinal illnesses in those regions. Lee and other researchers report their estimates in the journal PLOS ONE. Their calculations are thought to be the first regarding the global impact of norovirus. Lee says that he and his team wanted to quantify or put into numbers and characterize the impact of the norovirus.
We were interested in quantifying or better characterizing the impact of norovirus because it's something that you've heard of, but if you think about it, you're not really sure, well, what's the impact? How often does it occur? How widespread is it?
In fact, Lee says the actual number of people who get sick with norovirus may be much greater. Many people, he says, may just think they have a stomach bug when they actually have norovirus. A stomach bug is an informal way to describe something, such as a germ, that causes intestinal illness. Again, here is Bruce Lee.
So people may suffer with the symptoms and they think, oh, well, I've got a stomach bug, quote unquote, or I've got some food poisoning, and they never really report it or get diagnosed.
Lee hopes greater awareness will lead to control measures. These measures include washing hands and disinfecting food preparation areas. He adds that there is another important factor to consider: sick workers who still go to work. When a worker is sick, he says, they often feel obligated to still go to work. This is especially true for people in food service jobs who may lose wages if they miss work. Sick people working around food can contaminate or spread viruses to many people. Sick workers instead, he says, should be encouraged to stay home.
Many times people who work in restaurants or the food preparation industry feel obligated to show up to work even though they're sick, because many folks are on wages and they can't afford to miss a day, even a day. And so they'll come in sick and then they'll end up contaminating food and then spread it to many other people.
There is currently no vaccine for norovirus. However, Lee says there are experimental vaccines under development. He says he hopes one day a vaccine will help contain the spread of the virus. I'm Ana Mateo.
Next, Mario Ritter reports on recent activity in the South China Sea.
The United States has increasingly carried out what have been called freedom of navigation exercises in the South China Sea. This month, U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter visited a warship in the South China Sea in an effort to show America's commitment to security in the area. The exercises involve Navy ships and military aircraft. In a freedom of navigation operation, they are sent to areas where other countries have tried to restrict flights or shipping. The aim is to demonstrate that the international community does not accept such restrictions. The freedom of navigation operations have brought strong reactions from China. Now, some U.S. lawmakers have called on the Obama administration to carry out more operations close to artificial islands China is developing in the disputed waterway. Bob Corker of Tennessee is the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He expressed his ideas on Wednesday. He spoke before Deputy Secretary of State Anthony Blinken met with the committee. Corker said the freedom of navigation exercises have not slowed China's land reclamation efforts in the South China Sea.
Neither the rhetoric nor the freedom of navigation operations have deterred or slowed down China's land reclamation activities, including the stationing of military-related assets on these artificial islands.
He said that China could take further actions if an international court rules against it in its maritime territorial dispute with the Philippines. And he warned such a ruling could place American interests at risk.
But merely managing differences with China is not a successful formula, particularly when such management cedes U.S. influence and places American interest at risk in the Indo-Pacific and beyond.
In his comments, Blinken said the number of freedom of navigation operations carried out by the U.S. military has increased. He added that they will continue. Recent news reports, notably in the Washington Post and the Wall Street Journal, say China may be considering plans to develop other areas beyond the Spratly Islands. The reports say the U.S. Pacific Command has sent warplanes close to Scarborough Shoal, west of the Philippines. China is believed to have carried out survey work in that area. Those U.S. flights brought a sharp response from China. China claims most of the South China Sea as its territory. However, the Philippines, Vietnam, Taiwan, Malaysia, and Brunei have competing claims to different parts of the area. Nanjing University security expert Zhu Feng said he could not rule out Chinese construction of a lighthouse or a maritime monitoring post on Scarborough Shoal. However, he said a large land reclamation there would be out of the question. The Wall Street Journal reported his comments. I'm Mario Ritter.
One major technology company has seen a drop in sales of its products. Here again is Dan Friedel to tell us more.
How long have you had your Apple iPhone or computer? If you have not replaced that product in the last 2 or 3 years, you may be part of the reason for Apple's falling sales numbers. Apple is the world's most valuable company. Its yearly growth trend started in the early 2000s with exciting new computers and a portable music player known as the iPod. The company continued to grow with the introduction of the iPhone smartphone. Then it introduced the iPad tablet. Sales of Apple products grew every year for 51 straight quarters. That all changed on Tuesday when the company reported a drop in sales. Sales for the first quarter of 2016 dropped 13%. Sales dropped to $50.6 billion from $58 billion during the same quarter in 2015. The news caused Apple's stock to drop, too. The company's shares were down by about 8% in after-hours trading. Some experts say the struggling Chinese economy may be to blame for Apple's weaker sales. The company's report shows sales were down in China, Taiwan, and Hong Kong by a combined 26%. In the past, Apple was able to depend on sales growth in those markets. Apple's chief executive, Tim Cook, says the smartphone market is not growing because of the slowing economies in some countries. But other experts say Apple is no longer regularly producing exciting products. People who bought new Apple laptops or smartphones in the last 2 or 3 years do not feel like they need to buy the latest products. Rob Pegoraro is a technology writer for USA Today and Yahoo. He says he still likes to use the Apple products he owns, but there is nothing revolutionary right now.
You got a lot of people upgrading to the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. The 6S and the 6S Plus, they're better, but as the names would suggest, they're not exactly revolutionary. Normal people don't buy new phones every year.
Peguero also says that Apple did not really have a bad quarter. The company still makes a lot of money from the products it sells. It is just not growing anymore.
Their gross margin was 39.4% compared to 40.8%. I struggle to think of how many other industries or companies could pull down those kind of profit margins for, you know, over a decade straight.
Peguero says there is not much more room for improvement in the products Apple makes. For example, the company could create an iPhone with a battery that lasts 5 days. That would be amazing, but you're running into the laws of physics there, Peguero says. The Associated Press news agency reports that there are still parts of Apple's business that are growing. For example, there are 500 million iPhones in use. Those phones need cloud storage, apps, and music. That part of the company is worth $6 billion per quarter now. And that is an increase of 20% over the same period last year. There are also concerns that the Apple Watch, which came out a year ago, did not have better sales. But the watch actually sold more than twice as many units in its first year compared to the first iPhone in 2007. Right now, people can only guess what is next for Apple. Some think the company will make an electric car. It is building a new headquarters that has been described as a spaceship or a flying saucer by some observers. Peguero warns to not underestimate Apple just because of this small drop in sales.
This company, their problem is they made a lot of money, just not more money than they made the last quarter. You know, if that's failure, then I should only hope to be just as much of a disaster.
I'm Dan Friedel.
For VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. This week, we continue explaining commonly confused words in the English language.
That reminds me, Adam, do you still have my grammar book that I let you borrow last week?
No, I laid the book down on your desk yesterday.
You mean you laid the book down on my desk yesterday?
Lie, lay, laid, lied. What's the difference?
That's a hard question to answer. Both words have several definitions. But an easy way to remember the difference is this. Lay is a transitive verb. That means it requires an object in the sentence. Lie is an intransitive verb. That means it does not require an object. You said you put the book on my desk. Book is the object of the sentence, so you need the transitive verb lay.
I think I get it now. That seems easy enough.
Well, the difference between these two words is a little more complex than that. Let's keep going.
Lay means to put or set something down in a flat position. The past tense of lay is laid. Sometimes it is used with the word down. For example, he laid the newspaper down on the table. Or, the mother laid the baby down for a nap. Notice there is an object in each sentence. Newspaper in the first, and baby in the second.
The verb lie has several meanings. It can mean to be in a flat position on a surface, such as a bed. With this definition, it is also sometimes used with the word down. For example, the doctor told him to lie down on the examination table. Remember, lie is an intransitive verb. The subject is doing the action, not an object. To make these two words even more confusing, the past tense of lie is lay, L-A-Y. For example, last night, she lay in bed unable to fall asleep. In this example, even native English speakers might use the past tense of lay, which is laid. Listen to this famous song by Simon and Garfunkel. In this example, they are using the transitive verb lay, followed by the direct object me.
These next commonly confused words sound and look almost the same, affect and effect. But the one-letter difference changes a lot. Let's start with effect. E-F-F-E-C-T. Effect can act as a noun, or, in rare cases, a verb. As a noun, effect means a change that results when something happens. For example, the Chinese economy has an effect on global markets.
Affect, A-F-F-E-C-T, is usually used as a verb. Affect means to influence. In other words, affect means to have an effect on something or someone. For example, the Chinese economy affects global markets. Affect, A-F-F-E-C-T, can also be a noun, but it is much less common. As a noun, affect is an emotion or desire that influences behavior.
As mentioned before, effect can also be used as a verb. Used as a verb, effect has a similar meaning to affect. It means to cause something or make something happen. For example, President Obama has tried to effect a change in the country's health care policy. Again, effect is rarely used as a verb. If you are confused, just remember this. Effect is usually a noun, and affect is usually a verb.
Finally, we have than and then. Than, T-H-A-N, is both a preposition and conjunction. It is used when comparing things. For example, I am taller than my sister. Or, Canada is larger than Mexico.
Then is most often used as an adverb. It can mean at that time. It can also be used when describing what happens next. For example, I fed my dog, and then I walked my dog. You can also use then when describing something that must be true if something else is true. We call this an if-then statement. For example, if it is raining, then the concert will be canceled.
And that's Everyday Grammar for this week.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.